Okay, my name's Jim. I'm an addict.
Hey, Jim.
And you guys just want to pray a little just in case?
Yeah, just in case.
God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference, just for today. I'm grateful that my friends got up early. I already said I was Jim an addict. I mean, do you want me to say it again?
Sure.
I'm an addict. My name's Jim. Everybody else has told a little bit of their story, and that's really the best way for me to share about the NA way. When I had gotten clean, and that was right here in the only meeting in Narcotics Anonymous between Philadelphia and Minneapolis. You heard about it last night. It was called the Double Bubble Group. Okay. When I got clean, it was because I'd been around for 9 months trying to force myself to believe I was powerless over alcohol and other drugs. And I could never believe it, because I am not now and never was powerless over an inanimate object. You know, I pick inanimate objects up and move them around. I am not powerless over drugs or liquid drugs or suppository drugs. You know, I'm powerless over addiction. And it took me 9 months of coming around and having my ears full and my mouth open to realize that. When I got to the point of surrender, Narcotics Anonymous was there and saved my ass. And nothing else could have done it but that idea. It was the idea that surrendered or that descended around me and precipitated my surrender. And therefore, I mean, I saw that, you know, the fog had cleared enough that I could see that, and I was grateful and began to do everything that I understood was being of service to NA from the very beginning. And they didn't know what to do with me at the group because, you know, I was a loud mouth and I wanted to do something, and they sure didn't want to make me treasurer, and thank God they didn't. They made me literature chairman of the group, you know, so I went early and laid the literature out, you know, the reprints from the little white book, For Those We Love and Others, and the white book. That was our literature. And ordered literature for the group. And it never came and never came. It took it long to come. And we didn't have a book. And I wondered why we didn't have a book. And I felt the I felt that it was missing, you know, because I was working through the steps. I worked through the steps like I went from dealer to dealer out there in the street, you know, and I went from dealer to dealer quick because I didn't like cut. You know, I wanted the good stuff. I really wanted the pure stuff, the uncut stuff, and I don't know if I ever got there. But I went from dealer to their dealer to their dealer. I went from step to step to step, just the same way. Because I heard, you know, work your recovery like you worked your disease. And that's what I would try to do, and I'm not slow. My sponsor, my first sponsor, never knew he was my sponsor because he didn't ask me to sponsor me. But I clung to every word, and I followed him around like a puppy dog. And you heard him talk last night. He wasn't real articulate, but that's because he'd been through a bunch. But he said, if it's got NA on it, I'm there. And he was. I mean, first meetings all around, you know, Braddock and Butler and Youngstown. We started a meeting. He also backed me up at a corner when I got my loudmouth running one time, and he said, time for talking's over, show me. Don't tell me. Very significant thing in my recovery. So I quieted down a little bit about, you know, how grateful I was and did things. You know, one of the first things we did was we went to the convention. There was only one convention, you know. They called it the World Convention, but that wasn't very intimidating, you know, because it was the only convention there was. It's because it's the World Convention that, you know, and I thought I was going to meet N.A. And instead I met Bo and Greg, which for a long time was a whole lot about what N.A. was for me. How they saw it, not them on a pedestal. Well, I suppose I had them on a pedestal a little bit. But they fell off pretty fast. They're human. And then first East Coast Convention, and I met Guido, and you know, I don't remember a whole lot of others, man. You were one of the people that was stood out for me. And then we went, they were talking about those breakfasts where they, or lunches where they had to meet, you know, and we went to Harrisburg and to one of those meetings, and Bob got elected representative from Pennsylvania to go to the World Service Conference. And, you know, I went with him. I don't know if I was his alternate. He called me his alternate, you know, but I went with him because I was lucky enough to have this job where I could work, you know, 3 or 4 days or a week and then, you know, travel for a month and take care of myself for a month. I had a great situation, fortunate. I had this farm where my family let me just take care of the farm and tend to heifers and live in the house, so their insurance was cheaper and I didn't have to pay anything, you know. And got the benefits of a farm, you know, milk and meat and all that stuff that you get, you know, because you are in a farm family. And I could have raised a garden if I had the stones to weed. But didn't. That was cool because we could have our parties there, you know. And a lot of us in NA decided that we, you know, we weren't going to be sober, somber, serious, moderate, and not drunk. We were going to have some fun, you know, in recovery. You know, recovery didn't say, nothing anybody said was don't go have fun, just don't go be sick. You know, and after a while we heard that too. Anyway, next thing was happening was this World Service Conference, and I went with Bob to that, and I found out what NA was at Mecca. You know, I thought I was going to the source. And when I went to the source, I discovered that all of those people were still addicts and alcoholics. If you read the literature before the revisions of the Little White Book, you can hear Jimmy saying exactly what they were. You know, their goal was emotional sobriety. They perceived NA as a point of identification so addicts could find the healing therapy that helps all addicted people. Over in AA, the Liquid Fellowship, NA was where you brought your newcomers, and then when they were ready to recover, you took them over here to the other place. And they believed, honestly, that that's the role of Narcotics Anonymous. And you've heard, you know, many people talk about the East-West rift, and that's what it was about in the beginning. You know, I mean, we upstarts were committed to Narcotics Anonymous exclusively. And they, I don't think they believed we were going to stay clean. I don't think they believed that we were going to continue to recover. Anyway, I couldn't talk at the World Service Conference because I was an alternate. And if you've ever been there, you know alternates can't talk unless the representative goes out of the room. Bob was committed and he never went out of the room. And so I couldn't talk. I couldn't say any. You know, it's a good thing, too. It's a very good thing. But then at the World Service Conference, we had the beginnings of open participatory service, and all subcommittees you could go and be a full and complete part of. And, you know, this guy dressed all in black came in with two guys behind him, and on their shoulders a steamer trunk full of what he said was the literature input. And he was the literature committee chair. He was a guy I'd met down in Atlanta. And that sounded kind of exciting. And I was the literature guy back at the home group, so I decided to go to the literature committee and went there and got to participate. And they talked about the conferences they were starting, and they passed a paper around. One of the cool things we did back then, I think we should do today, is they passed a paper around. Everybody put down their name, address, and phone number, and then everybody got a copy of that afterwards. I'd love to have that from here. I'd be able to get in touch with everybody. You know, today you don't need name, address, phone number. All you need is, you know, first name and email address, and you got, you know, you got all you need. We do that, sort of, kind of, at our events. Anyway, literature committee let me participate, and I wasn't a writer or anything like that, but it really felt cool to be included. I mean, I had just barely a year at that time, and I got included as a full and complete voting member just because I showed up. And well, I'm not going to go long into this, but what happened was the literature movement that you've all heard about, you know, and a book was written through us. You know, Bo and others sent out letters to everybody in the fellowship saying, you are the book, send in your input, making everybody, giving everybody that uplift, and saying, come to our literature conferences, be a part of. We welcome everybody. And finally, I went to the third one, and that was in Memphis, where we finished the gray book. And this is a copy of it. It isn't exactly like it looked like. It had big ring binders and stuff, but there's a copy of it that our group produces for people who want to know their history. And to have something to read in the middle of the night, because this is like going to a meeting. This just feels like home more than any other literature to me. This is the pure uncut stuff, not a bit of cut on it. We distributed that to the entire fellowship, all 600 registered groups. That was March of 1981. It was a cool thing participating in that literature conference. You know, we would get together in groups of four or five people or less, and we would take people's input and be as true as we could to it and still take out the F words and take out the terrible language and stuff that didn't communicate and help it communicate. I mean, we all do that. We sit in a meeting, we listen to people, and it doesn't matter how educated they are. We hear what they have to say, and we do that editing in our head, you know. Oh, they meant da-da-da-da-da. And they did, you know. They just didn't happen to have those words. When it comes from us, it isn't perfect. And guess what? It ain't approved either. And we had three more conferences after people sent their input in. You know, over back then, 600 groups submitted to over 10,000 addicts from the dockets of local literature committee meetings. 10,000, that's a lot, contributed input. They said, you know, take this out, add this to it. We think it's good enough to go right now, da-da-da-da-da, whatever they said. We did our level best to be true to that and edited it over those three conferences into this. Now, you know, we hear a lot today about, oh, we don't have time, oh, we can't do that. We had that conference in February, sent out the grade book in March, asked for input by April, the end of April, got input from over 10,000 addicts, had the Santa Monica conference right after the World Service Conference in April, had the Warren conference in Santa Monica, California, West Coast. Warren, Ohio, depending on whether you live there or somewhere else, the eastern Midwest or the east, Miami, Florida. That's pretty south. You know, in September. And we kept getting more people and more people and more people at each conference because each of us went home and talked about this open participation. And at the same time, you know, we were looking forward to what was going to happen. What was going to happen is we were going to produce an approval form and distribute it to the entire fellowship, and we were going to need a service structure for that yes or no vote to go from groups to areas to regions to the World Service Conference. And so in order to have that, we had to build the areas and the regions. And we did that. And a matter of fact, in the middle of Warren, we went to Cleveland and helped the Ohio folks set up the Ohio region. And the whole fellowship was doing that. And in November, after proofreading everything we'd done when we felt in Miami that we'd done everything that we could, this was produced, the approval form of the basic text. And this is the best we thought we could do, and quite honestly, I think we went past the very best. If you compare the grade book to the approval form, I think you'll agree. We overdid it. We took too much poetry out that, you know, some of us felt was excess, you know, or whatever. Doesn't matter. Anyway, the fellowship got it. We distributed it to all the registered groups. 9 months later, after we distributed the first one, and this open participatory service atmosphere was going out to the entire fellowship, and we had to send it to 1,800 groups. Narcotics Anonymous had tripled in size in 9 months. That's never happened since, even with huge influx internationally. It's never happened since. And I don't think it was about what was being done, the book. I don't think it was about Narcotics Anonymous finally realizing it was an autonomous fellowship, a standalone program to address recovery from addiction. Although those things are valid, I think it was about the process, the open, participatory, inclusive process that all of us believed in, that all of us were participating in, and the spirit that came from that, that came from saying to somebody who felt that they couldn't help, come along, we'll find something for you to do, don't worry about money, don't worry about where you're going to stay, don't worry about what you're going to eat, just come along, help us. We want all the help we can get, anybody, everybody. I think that's what precipitated that growth. I think the spirit of inclusiveness, of open participatory service. Anyway, the book got approved, and I had gone to the World Service Conference in 91 as a state representative from Ohio, and when I went out there, I'd met up previous to that with this girl who had a vision for the Voice of NA, which was the only like publication that we had in our, the only newsletter we had fellowship-wide in Narcotics Anonymous, and she had discovered something called a word processor and sold Jimmy on that idea, and she'd made the Voice of NA previous to 1980 was or 1981 was simply a report of the minutes of the World Service Conference, kind of a synopsis of the minutes. It wasn't really the accurate minutes. Well, who knows? Maybe they called it the accurate minutes. I was at five World Service Conferences in the early times, and I never once saw an accurate set of minutes. Either that or my memory was faulty. Maybe I had early onset Alzheimer's at 33. I don't know. I got excited about that, hearing it from her and participating in that open participatory service. And in 81, I went to the World Service Conference with a personal axe to grind as well as representing Ohio. And in new business, I said, why don't we do a newsletter? Why don't we do a fellowship-wide newsletter? And instead of getting that same inclusive stuff, one of the trustees, the guy that wrote Fat Addict, stood up and told me, we already got one. Jimmy writes the NA Voice, and that's all we need. Be quiet. Sit down. Go back to the hinterlands. And, you know, of course, they tried to squash my idea. But the overwhelming influence of the Open Participatory Service in the Literature Committee was bigger than that in my life. And then a member could make input to the World Service Conference. A member could make a motion. All you had to do was write it down and submit it to the right subcommittee. And if you were there, why, of course you had to be there to get one of them slips to write it down. You know, it wasn't widely known that a member could do that. But if you were there, just wrote it down. So I prayed. And something miraculous happens when I pray really hard and I ask to be used as an instrument. The words aren't mine. And that's what happened with the motion. The motion went that the World Service Conference create a new subcommittee to administer the publishing of a monthly magazine on recovery from addiction, the NA Way. And Another cool thing happened at that World Service Conference. A couple guys who understood direct responsibility got elected to the chair and treasurer of the conference. My friend Bo and my friend Joseph. And they started a project called the Fellowship Report, which has morphed into the CAR. And the Fellowship Report reported everything that was going on at World Service to every group, and it went out free. It was the first time in our fellowship that we had open and honest, objective communication between World Services and those they served with direct responsibility. And in that fellowship report was that motion. And all the groups didn't know no better, so they voted on it. And it sounded good to them. And it came back to the 1982 conference where this was approved as our basic text, and where a couple other things happened. And it got voted on and it passed. And they elected three people chair of that new subcommittee, co-chair. And I was one of them. Linda from Atlanta was one of them. And Bill Z was the other one from Maryland. And we sat down and decided that we were going to come out with 12 issues in the first year. And that our first issue was going to come out for the World Convention the following September, and we started to put the stuff together. There's a guy that worked on it. Worked on the committee. And, you know, we didn't really know what to do, but we put together a group of folks. Eventually, there was a girl named Mickey from Indianapolis who was a professional typesetter who did the typesetting in her off time for us and got the printing done. And Bo, of course, knew what we were doing, and he printed those beautiful, beautiful covers for a year or so. And we took open participation in literature on the road. We went to conventions, we went to meetings, and wherever I could get 3, 4, 5 people interested, through an announcement, we'd sit down after the meeting, we'd sit down at a workshop or after a workshop at a convention, we'd sit down at a service meeting, and we would edit stories together that people had sent in. And when people didn't send them in, we'd write them. And you know, I don't think that I thought this way, but I wanted so bad to share that process on an ongoing basis with somebody, because I'd seen such miracles come from just ordinary people in the literature movement. You know, when you pray, and we always prayed, you know, God, relieve me of self-will and ego sufficient to make me an instrument of your will. You know, when you pray that with sincerity, it happens. Stuff comes through you, particularly in a group setting, that you didn't know was there. You'll be sitting and your hands moving and you don't even feel the effort. And stuff's coming through you. And it ain't yours, but it is. But it is. And we captured a lot of that special stuff. You know. And I edited the whole thing, and believe me, I edited it harshly. It represented what I'd been taught and I believed was the philosophy of Narcotics Anonymous: powerlessness over addiction, the disease, recovery from addiction, clean, not straight, not sober, clean. And yet, I believe I had learned how to edit your work with what you were saying in my heart. I didn't believe everything that everybody was saying, of course. You know, some were sharing experiences that weren't mine, and I didn't quite understand. But I was moved by them, and I got a lot of criticism for doing it so harshly. We decided as a group that it would be anonymous, that nobody would have an identifying mark at the end of their piece. And that's how it was. It was anonymous. You know, you couldn't identify who it was or where they came from unless you really knew that person intimately and could you know, hear their style, which I tried to make so that, you know, I mean, it wasn't unique if I could, you know. It's like editing Bo's stuff. You edit Bo's stuff, and you almost get caught up in his style, Cosmic Phasmagoria. And I still have the box with all the original input, all the letters. I was showing somebody earlier, we put a complete open-handed financial statement in each issue, showing exactly where we were, line by line. Ask Nas what they spend on travel. Ask them, pin them down, and you'll find that it's in their 990, which is charitable tax reporting, listed under development, outreach, conventions. Or, to a normal guy like me, it's hidden. Nothing was hidden. I mean, one thing we couldn't determine from that is how many subscriptions, but I think you go back, you can build on that and see the progression. We sold subscriptions for money. We took money. And consequently, the trustees wrote us and said, you guys are breaking the traditions. They didn't say which tradition or how we were violating them. So we sat down in committee and listed the ways we were enhancing the traditions and sent that back to them and kept doing what we were told to do. We had met many of the trustees in literature committee, and they were human to us. They weren't gods. And we also understood that perhaps there were people in the fellowship that understood the traditions much better than the trustees did. The big thing was, in my mind, is that we shared open participatory service with a lot of people who hadn't had the opportunity to be in the literature movement and wanted to, really wanted to. And you know, if you listen to Connie's story, I bet, I haven't heard it, but if you listen to Mickey's story, you'll hear the impact they had on people's lives. You know, being included when they felt that they were new, they felt that they were too awkward in some way or not educated enough to be a part of. And none of that mattered. All that mattered was willingness. In our original genuine service manuals, it said the qualifications to serve are well, sometimes time for formal ones, but mainly the willingness to serve and the resources to be of service. And I think that's what it should be. Well, anyway, that Neverland adventure, that wonderful spiritual opportunity only lasted a short period of time. You know, there were folks who believed that this upstart fellowship that thought it was running itself had to be stopped. And they proceeded to stop it. I don't know about the sequence of events exactly, but I'll tell you what I remember. At the 82 conference, the chairman of the policy committee had distributed a service manual to the fellowship, an entire service manual from top, the groups, to bottom, the world. A whole new service structure. And it talked about simple ways to fix the things that we had been having trouble with. The biggest thing we'd been having trouble with was a lack of direct responsibility at the WSO and a perception of elitism, a perception of power that we didn't think really existed. And the policy committee had submitted, and I was a member of that one too, and it included the World Service Office as a subcommittee of the World Service Conference. That was in the second half of that service manual that everybody out in the fellowship voted on. Policy chairperson at the 82 conference stood up, gave his report, and only submitted the first half. That was a decision that he and some other folks had made outside of policy committee. He was not instructed to do that. He was not trusted to serve in that way. He was not directly responsible to do that. He did it on his own. I guess I call that self-will. I'm not sure what you call it. That's the way it was accepted. Nobody called him on his stuff. I regret that. Part of what I do today is trying to make amends for that. That passed overwhelmingly, the first half. RSRs at that time voted the conscience of their regions, areas, and groups right to the grassroots level without changing their vote. And I believe that if the whole thing would have been submitted, the whole thing would have passed. And I believe if that would have happened, that we wouldn't have the differences in philosophy that we experience today. That's just my opinion. That person was elected World Service Conference chairperson. And the next year, the fellowship had been distributed a motion that had actually came up several times at the conference. And the motion was that RSRs only vote at the conference. You see, here in Pennsylvania, over in Ohio, and across most of the fellowship, only RSRs vote at area committee. The other people, the chairperson, the vice chair, the subcommittee chair people, are trusted servants. They don't need to vote. They already voted in their home group. And they're trusted servants. Their job is to be directly responsible and not govern. You know? And so they don't need to vote. But at the World Service Conference, and that's how the whole fellowship developed, with some exceptions. At the World Service Conference, they had set it up in the late 70s, so all those officers, chairperson, vice chairperson, secretary, and all the subcommittee chair people voted. When I went in 1980, there were only four people who could be called RSRs, and one of them really wasn't. He just was out there visiting from New Jersey, and they assigned him New Jersey to vote for. Anyway, the reason they did that was that all the trustees needed to vote, everybody needed to vote in order for there to be enough votes to have any difference of opinion or any discussion. However, when the fellowship representatives began to exceed the number of trusted servants, trustees, etc., it just didn't make any sense. It wasn't logical, and it certainly didn't follow seventh and the second and ninth tradition. You know, so the fellowship voted on the motion that RSRs only vote. Came up to conference, and many of us counted the vote because we knew that it was going to take a two-thirds majority. It was two-thirds. Two-thirds of the people who voted on the motion voted yes. That chairperson, the Twiggs guy, turned back to the parliamentarian, talked to him for a few minutes, and called the vote failed. Now, there's no definition like this. The reason that was given that the vote failed was that it was short one number of two-thirds of the last roll call. So what? Two-thirds of those people who voted on it, nope, that two-thirds thing never was defined. It wasn't a matter of policy. The fellowship's group conscience was obvious. The group conscience of NA, and it said RSRs only vote. The conference self-will was also obvious. It called the vote failed. In my mind, and you'll probably have to work pretty hard to change it, at that point in time, the World Service Conference said, we're not gonna submit to the second tradition. We don't believe in group conscience. We don't think you guys know enough. We think you're the unwashed masses. We know better than you. We're not going to operate according to the ninth tradition. We don't think we're directly responsible to do what you tell us to do. Now, at that point in time, some really good friends of mine got, well, maybe it wasn't quite exactly that point in time, but right around there, they got up, walked out of the World Service Conference, left NA. Did you ever wonder why an awful lot of your old-timers are no longer in NA? They're over in the Liquid Fellowship or at church or somewhere else. Did you think that was their disease? It might not be. It might be because they're disgusted with these tradition violations that we constantly, perpetually continue to make. Anyway, this beautiful project of the fellowship, this wonderful open participatory gift that God had given Narcotics Anonymous through people who tried to uphold the traditions and carry on the open participatory process, was taken from the conference, given to the office, because we handled money, basically. And in the first year, Robin from here in Pennsylvania was chairperson, and it continued to be basically produced by the committee. After that, after Bob Stone got fully entrenched as office manager, it gradually became more and more dissemination of the party line propaganda of those know-betters, people that know better than group conscience, people that understand the big picture and would do for us what we can't do for ourselves. And that's what it is today. It's not like this. I went back and tried to get re-involved like a couple years after I hadn't been at the World Service Conference. And I got put on the editorial committee. Of course, by then, everything was closed. You had to have a service resume. Willingness to serve was not enough. And because I had come and I was likely to cause a lot of trouble if I was given any other position, I was awarded a place on the editorial committee anyway, and I did my best to participate in that. I really, really did, but I couldn't stomach it. The daring by conference call, in the first place, that is so distant, so inhuman, that you don't get the same thing as we got when we took it on the road and carried it out to the fellowship and had people participate in person. Because I can only hear about half of what you're saying. Your demeanor, your expressions, how you use your hands, what it feels like to hug you is so much more important than just the word you say. I can only get about half of it on a conference call. I can only get about 10% of it through email. You know, it's not the same. Now, I understand, you know, we can't all travel to China once a month, you know. I understand that group conscience and direct responsibility is time-consuming, and it takes a lot of work. And it takes tremendous communication, because we got to take these complex ideas of the people that think they know better and simplify them down to something group members can tolerate and understand. Now, it's possible, very possible. I mean, you know, any RSR can read the SS Project and say, this on its face is about changing a bunch of names and gerrymandering the politics of the fellowship, and in reality, all it is a greater effort to control. A greater effort to control. You know, I mean, it's easier to control 5 or 6 folks than it is to control 200 or 300. And you know, any GSR can read it and figure that out. I hope I'm not suggesting something for you to say. Read it yourself. Check it out. Everything that comes from the official communications channels today is, in my opinion, spin of one type or another. Now and then a little genuine recovery shines through, and I'm grateful for that. I think recovery is stronger than disease. I think that it has to shine through. You know, I'd love for this to come back. We made an effort, and now there's some folks continuing that effort, and it's called the New Old NAA, and it's about the same thing. However, you know, there's no money to produce it in hard copy, although some members will contribute their own money and do that. And it's not a valid project of an accepted structural entity. Key word here is accepted. Accepted by who? Communication, in my mind, is the most important element of a movement. And that's our problem today in NA. There's no way for us to communicate with the others who want to hear what we have to say, except in our groups. And most, or at least many, groups are pretty darn healthy. You know, every now and then you go to a group that don't quite understand and somebody on Suboxone's chairing. But, you know, usually you can kind of visit in the halls and correct those sort of situations. If you don't act like a know-better, but I'll tell you what, if you try to correct one of those situations and start doing this, it's gonna go the other way. you're not going to get what you want. But all of us love that when a $300,000 a year consultant tells the world how to do it and they publish it in the new, modern, Nas anyway, or in literature produced by paid employees. We accept it. You know, the simple fact, folks, is we've been conned. None of us think that we can be conned, because we were cons. So when we get clean, we're all so arrogant that we believe we can't be conned. And we have, across 25 years, bought this con that they know better. Just let them do it. You heard last night the final analysis. We don't have much time left, guys. We're going to have to wake up. We're going to have to take our fellowship by its bootstraps. And if we believe in group conscience and direct responsibility and self-support, you see, I believe that an open, inclusive service that being allowed, just because we're members and want to be in any service project we in our hearts want to help with, I believe that kind of service is part of the Sam tradition. I mean, I don't have much money. I don't know about you guys. I don't know how the economy has affected you, but I don't have much money. I can't contribute much money, but I got a bit of talent left. I ain't got Alzheimer's yet. I can speak two words in a row. I can share something in writing. I can participate, and I want to. I want to really bad. But, you know, if I went into the literature committee today, how far do you think I'd get? Not very far. Not very far. Bo and I went into the literature committee in a Charlotte quarterly in 1988. We went in there and we sat down and they were talking about some problems and Bo started to say something. Bo S. started to say something. And they said, "You can't talk here. You can't share in this meeting. You're not a part of this literature committee." I mean, my God, what arrogance! But that's the way it is. That's the way we allowed it to be. It's our problem. It's not them that caused it. It's us. It's our apathy. It's our ignorance of what's really happening. And if we're a trusted servant, it's our lack of direct responsibility for finding out the facts and presenting both sides. We've only heard one side for 25 years. You guys, and I, if I live that long, could have this again. You know. An open, participatory newsletter for all of NA, a meeting in print, a learning day progressively over a number of different issues for trusted servants, the way to share what we have so we get to keep it. You know, you can have that again, but you ain't got it now. I'm sorry. You know, one of my biggest frustrations is that I know I got to give away what I've been given in order to keep it. And I can't do that. Because what I was given was open participation. And it no longer exists in that part of the world of NA. Now, it exists in a few meetings in Allentown. It exists in a few meetings in northeastern Ohio. It exists among groups that get together and try to accomplish something in the fellowship. It exists here and now among us. And that's great, because I get to live. I mean, I'm selfish about this thing. I got to give it away to keep it, you know. And I mean, I don't mean you got to accept it. I've worked with hundreds of newcomers that haven't accepted it and asked me to sponsor them and never called me. You know, I mean, the big effort is saying, yeah, sure, here's my number. That's the big effort. The big effort is sharing. And I don't want anybody to get the idea that I think these folks are evil. I just think they're misinformed. And in reality, it's a wonderful thing talking about the NA way, because I started to get that attitude too. I started to get the attitude that because I'd been involved in world service for a little period of time, that I knew better. Thank God for my friend Joseph Proctor, who always called me on my shit. And he said, you can't act that way. We all were included. And Joseph was such a great example of it, because he genuinely didn't write. And yet, if you use the basic text, you know, the reason you got it is Joseph Proctor. One of the reasons you got it is Joseph Proctor. Because he gave neck rubs, and because he arranged for coffee machines, and because he got typewriters, and because he helped others do when they didn't think they could. You know, because he facilitated. He was the embryonic facilitator of this fellowship. Well, I don't have any idea about what the future's going to bring. I used to get frustrated with my sponsor, because he kept saying that God ain't going to allow us to fuck it up. And as far as I could see, it was getting more and more fucked up all the time. And I got real frustrated with him. But I think in the final analysis, that's true. I trust you. I believe in you. I believe that you're going to take that stand, make that effort. I believe that you're going to include your fellow member and allow yourself to have projects where members can be included. I believe you're going to do what our group does. We have two events a year. We don't see the need, and haven't for a long time, for an area committee. You know, but when the idea of a U.S. service conference came and it looked like group conscience might mean something again, like our group conscience could be carried somewhere that mattered, that was potentially U.S. fellowship-wide, maybe not at first, but eventually, why, we formed an area committee. And we get together and have fun and do things together, you know, paying a whole lot of business. I don't think there's a whole lot of business in most areas, because people are doing things, you know. Oh, yeah, we haven't fought yet. I carry my buck knife there, but I never had it out. I never had it out yet. And I can't say that about the first few area committee meetings I went to. Greg was right. God ain't going to let us screw it up. But we have to keep our eyes open. If we keep our eyes open and we see things for what they are. And I don't know about you, but I don't like to be told I know better than you. I don't believe in somebody who thinks that they're superior to group conscience. I see too many of them in local service. I've been that guy, and I was wrong. And you know, together we can. Together we can. We can change the world. One act at a time, one project at a time, inclusiveness all the time. We can change the world. I love you. That's all I got. Thank you.